Shabbos was Shabbos Parshas Matas Masai, again, like this year, is the same Kriyas as it was back in Tavshin Analog 21 years ago. So it was the second day of Chedesh Av, that was Shabbos Parshas Matas Masai. So we actually have missed a few weeks. We had 1 week in between Chukas, but so basically what had been happening in that period was that more and more the Rebbe was emphasizing the inyan of the subject of Geula and speaking about it much more detail. Parshas Shlach, and then Parshas, and then on Chav Ches Sivan, the Rebbe spoke very strongly. The Rebbe spoke about how the Beis Hamikdash is going to come down in 770 first, and then go from there. And similarly in Parshas Kerach, Gimel Tamas, the Rebbe spoke. And then we did the Sich of Chukas. Also, the Rebbe spoke very strongly about Geula, and even seeing the miracles before the Geula actually happens. Similarly in Parshas Balak, the Rebbe spoke again very strongly about learning in Yanni Mashiach and Geula as a way of preparing yourself and putting yourself in the mind frame of Geula and actually transforming yourself into a Geula person from a Golus person. And similarly in Parshas Pinchas, the Rebbe spoke about Machdo Eretz Yisrael, the lessons from that, which the way the Rebbe put it is that you have to actually begin to get used to. They had already started saying in Parshas Shlach and about the Meraglim that they prepared the way, that part of the preparation is that you have to start preparing yourself to be in a frame of mind of Geula and to be to make the internal adjustments and preparedness. So that was a theme that was going week after week, and it was really came out really strong in Parshas Pinchas, which was the week before this, Parshas Pinchas, the Rebbe concluded by saying the actual lesson. The Rebbe says, the Rebbe said then the actual lesson in simple terms is standing close immediately before the redemption. Every Jew has to become used to, get himself used to redemption. And he has to put himself into a state and a feeling of redemption through making his personal day a Geula day and making his personal space Eretz Yisrael through doing his Avodah in this moment and in this place with Betachlus HaShleimus, Machshava Dibur Maisa. And the Rebbe says also it should bring it out in speech, and it should also influence his family and those close to him and those he in his sphere of influence, that they should also become completely infused with this state of Geula. So that was the theme that the Rebbe was developing over a period of a few weeks. In the Sikh of Shabbos Parshas Matas Masai, interestingly enough, it sort of ended up, being like some of the talks of the later years in general, and sometimes it was even more noticeable when the Rebbe would speak in the weekdays. But even on Shabbos, sometimes in the Sikhs of the later years, it almost sounded like the Rebbe was stringing together just a vast amount of remuzim, number, like numerological references, and just an endless string of remuzim, and when you walked away from it, you didn't like get the message so much. It seemed to be just a lot of, you know, related, connected ideas, related and connected to the numbers of the time and the numbers, the days of the month and the days of the, and so on. So, and then afterwards you would see the edited Sikha, they somehow, you know, put together and came out with, you know, some theme to explain it all. But even then, in this Sikha chapter, in Parshas Matas Masai, if you just like learn through it, there's a lot of this kind of, you know, using a lot of allusions and numbers and so on, and it's sometimes hard to, it's hard to like discern, extract the actual message when you get caught up in the whole presentation, so to speak. So I'm going to do something a little differently. I'm not really going to go through point by point. I do select points, but not even going to go point by point. Everything that with every numerological reference and every. But I want to start off with a basic concept that you need to understand and work with, and then we'll see how much we can get to actually what it says inside in order to understand and appreciate where the Rebbe is going with all this to whatever extent we can in the limited time we have. So, very basically, the whole point of Chassidus, really, I mean, obviously, we could say the whole point of Chassidus from many different angles, but basically, what Chassidus is about, what it does for you when you learn Chassidus, and it's basically the way everything in the world is constructed. There's the external manifestation of things. There's the reality that you see. And then there's the deeper, inner, spiritual, behind the scenes, what's really going on, okay? So in everything that in existence, there's what you see, there's what you experience, and then there's what's really happening behind the scenes. So when we talk in terms of Hasidic terminology, we use the term generally pnimius and chitzonius. There's the external manifestation, there's the chitzonius, and then there's the pnimius, which is both covers what's really going on behind the scenes and also the inner intent, the inner purpose of what it is that you're seeing and experiencing. Basically, again, we're talking just very general basic ideas. Basically, when we talk about the idea of Geula, and the way that Rebbe was setting it up, this whole idea, the earlier weeks that we covered with Emor and Achri Kadesh, where the Rebbe spoke a lot about the Geula being made up of the word Geula, with the introduction of the Aleph into Geula. That's redemption. Basically, what redemption really is when that Golus means that the external reality conceals the inner reality. Okay? Or it manifests in a way that's not consistent with the inner reality, which is why it conceals, that's how it conceals the inner reality. Geula basically means that the inner reality is revealed. When the inner reality is revealed, then the external manifestation, either in certain cases when the external manifestation is a negative manifestation of a positive thing. So when the inner reality is revealed, either the external manifestation, the negative external manifestation disappears, or those aspects that are not negative per se, they just conceal what's really going on. So instead of, they no longer conceal, but rather express and reveal what the inner reality is. So that's really, when it comes down to it, what's the difference between a Golos reality and a Geula reality is that the Golos reality means you're living in a world where the reality that you live and see and experience and encounter conceals the inner reality. And living in a Geula reality is where the inner reality is revealed to you, even if it's not always fully manifest in the external reality. So for instance, when we say Chassidus that Rabbi Isaac Hummel said that he heard from the Alter Rebbe that for lofty neshamas like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the Churban never happened. They experienced reality like the Beis HaMikdash is still standing. So what does that mean? I mean, there's a Churban. I mean, it happened, and there's all kinds of laws associated with. It's a reality. It's a Torah reality. The Torah expects us to. Yeah, that's only an external manifestation of. But the true inner reality is that the Beis HaMikdash is no less present. The spiritual inner reality of the Beis HaMikdash is no less present in this world than it ever was. The difference that changes only in the external manifestation of that inner reality. In the external manifestation of that inner reality, we experience a Churban and a Golos. Someone like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, lofty soul like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that's on the level of experiencing the inner reality. So to him, his experience is a reality. So it's the same thing as if the Beis HaMikdash was standing. Because that's the inner reality. The inner reality is that he experiences the divine presence in this world as manifested in the Beis HaMikdash without, as if nothing ever happened. And this is actually alluded to in a Gemara. The Gemara says, about the Eivishter, that the Eivishter cries over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara asks, but how could it say that the Eivishter cries in this hidden chambers? If it says that Oiz v'chedvavim kaimai, that in his place there's only joy. So how could it be that we say that the Eivishter is in mourning? So the Gemara answers that there are inner chambers and outer chambers. This, that it says that the Eivishter cries over the Churban, that's in the outer chambers. This, that there's always joy in the presence of the Eivishter, that's in the inner chambers. So what does this mean? How does that... Gemara answered the question. So the Eivishter is happy in the inner chamber and he's crying in the outer chamber. What does that mean? What it means is, again, the inner reality is all good. It's all good, it's all light, it's all joy. That's the inner reality. However, sometimes because the external manifestation is manifested in a negative way, so for that, there's an external aspect of sadness over the external manifestation in a negative way. But the true reality, the Eivishter's true reality doesn't change. He's just externally, he's feeling for us how we experience the external reality. But internally, in his inner chambers, the state of joy doesn't change because it's all good. There is no negativity. The negativity only exists externally. So when the Rebbe talks about a person adjusting himself and acclimating himself and preparing himself to actually put himself into a state of geula, and to actually, the Rebbe says he should have a matzav and a regish of geula. He should actually feel. So we're not just talking about a theoretical, conceptual acceptance of the fact that there is a difference between panemius and chitzonius. Okay, that we've had for hundreds of years since Chassidus came along and explained the panemius of the inner reality of pretty much all of existence as we know it. So yeah, that's been around for hundreds of years. Now we know there's a difference between the panemius and the chitzayim. Right? It's not enough to just have that knowledge and have that information. What the Rebbe is saying is that based on the time that we're living in now, we're holding at a point where the degree of accessibility, that we can actually access that inner reality, to the point that we can achieve a state which is consistent with that inner reality, and experience feelings come from feelings are based on much more on the experiential side of life than on the conceptual side of life. So we can actually achieve a state and a level of experience where we're actually experiencing the inner reality, not just accepting it on faith or accepting it conceptually. The point is that we should actually be experiencing the inner reality. So when we look at things that appear to be negative, we naturally and instinctually only look to see what's the positive message, what's the positive, because that's the reality we live in. It's not a game. It's not a clever way to play on words and numbers and to try to twist things around and present things in a positive light. As part of the Hasidic general approach to be more positive rather than to be negative. The whole point is, of all of these exercises in what the Rebbe says and how the Rebbe presents things, is the Rebbe is saying, I need you. What I'm trying to accomplish here is, and what I'm trying to bring to you, and what I need to get from you, is you need to be in that state where everything you see and everything you experience and everything you know, you see it all in terms of the inner reality. You actually live and experience the goodness of that inner reality, the godly reality. That inner reality is the godly reality, as we said in some of those earlier sikhs that I ever spoke about, the Aleph representing different levels of godly revelation in the Gaila. What I'm trying to get you is, later that I was just using expressions here, already back in Parshas Balak, that I ever used more the terms of transforming the person. Later that I ever starts using more the language of opening your eyes. The point is, I'm trying to get you to see and live and experience the world from the perspective of that inner reality, not as you have been till now, which is the outer reality stinks, the inner reality is great. After Mashiach comes, we'll see the inner reality. Duh. I need you to get, so basically, you have no in-between. You have the outer reality stinks, inner reality is great, Mashiach comes, then we see how it's all good. So much so that even the things in the outer reality that seem to be bad, we'll see how those even express the ultimate goodness, and we'll even thank the Eivishter for all those seemingly negative things. Okay? So the Rebbe says, how do you get from here to there? So you always thought the way you get from here to there, it's puff, Mashiach comes down and waves his magic wand, and now you're no longer here, now you're there. That's not how this is going to work. The way this is going to work is, what Mashiach does is, he gives you the means and the tools to start the transitioning from one stage to the next through your own efforts. So on the one, obviously, it's not something you could do on your own, because you can't do your own geula, so to speak. You can't redeem yourself. Okay, it's not something you could do on your own. You do have a spark of Mashiach, and you can experience and that empowers you. Mashiach empowers your personal Mashiach to allow you to experience your personal redemption. But that's all. So I'm giving you the powers and I'm giving you the tools to develop and experience your personal redemption, and that way be preparing yourself for the actual ultimate redemption, where the actual physical reality will already reveal and express the inner reality, and it's not going to require your efforts to see it. It'll be obvious. But so there's an in-between stage where you need to work to see it, but you can see it. In the earlier stage, only people like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai or great tzaddikim like the Baal Shem Tov and the Rabbeim, they can see it. In the future reality, everybody can see it. In the in-between reality where we are now, we need to be transitioning. You're being given from above the powers, the means, and the tools to begin to see and experience and live in that reality through your own efforts. The point where the world was holding required us that we had to work with and deal with much lower issues. We had to struggle and refine the physicality of the world. We had to deal with those external manifestations. We had to, piece by piece, part by part, we had to sit and fix and correct all the negativity in the world and extract the sparks and the light and the potential for holiness that exists in the world. But now the Rebbe is coming along and saying that we completed that process. That process was completed, but what we need in order to, the process is completed, so let's just go, we're finished, there's this new idea that the Rebbe introduced, that there's a transition period. This is the transitioning from sitting and struggling with the external concealments and negative manifestations, and being in a state where there is no opposition, there is no concealment, there are no external negativities. We need to transition. There's a transition stage in which we need to be adjusting our capacities to see and experience the inner reality, even in the face of a world which sometimes seems to be trying to conceal and oppose that inner reality. We still need to be, because Mashiach is here, so to speak, because it's the year that Mashiach is revealed in, and Mashiach stands on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash and announces the time of your redemption has arrived. What this means in practical terms is that you need to do this personal transitioning, each one in his own way, and then you need to be guiding everyone else around you, as he said in the Sikha of the week before in Pinchas, that the lottery itself spoke and said that you have to get that the other person is already proclaiming the same concept, and that you not only influence others in a way that they become influenced, but that they themselves are crying out and proclaiming the message. So here the Rebbe comes along in this sikha in Parshas Matas Masa. And the Rebbe again, I'm going to go through some of the different things that the Rebbe brings out. But you'll see how it's really all trying to hammer home this point and how we need to be looking at things, and especially again when you talk about looking, seeing the inner reality, experiencing the inner reality of the world. It all starts from Torah. Because Torah is the blueprint of the inner reality. So it all starts from Torah. So the Rebbe says, starts off the Sikha saying that one of the unique aspects of this Shabbos, the Shabbos of Matas Masa, is the Shabbos that we complete the book of Bamidbar, which is the fourth book in the Torah, which really is the completion of the completion of the entire Torah, because the fifth book is already Moshe speaking. So even though, yes, halachically, it's considered part of the Torah, and it's all 5 books, and there's no difference in the holiness. But the fact is, that in terms of the Torah, as it's given from above, purely directly from above, without it, this is in a sense the end of the entire Torah, because the 5th book is also referred to as Mishnah Torah, sort of a review of the Torah. And at the end, after we complete the 4th book of the Torah, we proclaim Chazak Chazak v'nischazek. Whoever says, what is the meaning of proclaiming Chazak Chazak v'nischazek? By proclaiming Chazak Chazak v'nischazek, this expresses which means be strong, and be strengthened. The idea is it expresses the strength, the power of all matters relating to Torah. And not only that, but this power, this strength, we repeat 3 times. We say 3 expressions to express this strength, because that to express that this strength has the additional advantage of 3 times makes a chazaka, which chazaka indicates the strength and the permanence of a thing. So what we're doing is we're expressing the power and of all matters Torah. So the Rebbe says we have to understand the connection between completing the 4th book and this proclamation, proclaiming the power of Torah in a way of 3 times as a chazaka. How is it we always complete the 4th book during the 3 weeks? Which it would seem that the 3 weeks... And in fact, in some years, like it fell out in that year and in this year, we actually do it in the 9 days. So now we know that the 3 weeks, and especially the 9 days, seem to represent a weakness in matters pertaining to holiness. So how is it that punct in this time we complete the in a sense the entire Torah, and we proclaim the strength and power of Torah? So we could say, but that's why, because there's a perception of a certain weakness in matters pertaining to holiness and areas of holiness during this period. So we need to shore it up. We need to support it, to strengthen it. That's why we make this proclamation. So that was just, if that's the case, then you're not saying it's really connected with the time. You're saying it's the opposite message of the message of the time. It's just there to try to correct and rectify the time. Rebbe says it would seem to be make more sense to say that there's actually a direct connection with the time, not just in the sense of trying to fix the problems of the time. Because we say that everything that the parshas of the Torah are associated with the content and the meaning of the time. Here you're saying it has the opposite meaning. You're saying that it has the opposite meaning, but we need it because to correct the problem. So the Rebbe says, what's the connection with... The Rebbe says, in order to understand this, we have to first explain the connection between Chazak, Chazak, v'nischazek with the Parsha, which we are completing, at the completion of which we proclaim Chazak Chazak v'nischazek. The parsha is Parshas Masai. Now, and in some years it's Parshas Matos and Masai together. So the Rebbe says, again, I'm telling you, it's going to sound like you're just stringing together a lot of things, but there's a point there, and that's where you have to hang in. So the Rebbe says, since in this year Matas and Masai are together, so we have to say that when we say Chazak, Chazak, and this Chazak, we're talking about we're bringing out the strength of Matas and the strength of Masai and the strength of Matas and Masai together. So Rebbe says that it would seem that the whole idea of strength and power would apply more to Matas, because Matas means a staff, which actually represents strength and power. And in fact, in Torah we say that the word mata is a term which indicates rulership, royalty, because it expresses the idea of power. And in fact, the pasuk, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that says, "Matis ois al shiftei meishla." It's staffs of strength and rods of rulers. So, staff represents strength. Whereas Maasai travels would seem to be the opposite of strength. A person who's on the move from place to place, and he's not stopping in one place, he's constantly on the move. So, and when we talk about traveling means, you literally leave one place entirely and you have to transpose yourself into another place. That would seem to be the opposite of strength and power. And this that we proclaim, Chazak, Chazak, Venis, Chazek, we always proclaim it at the end of Maaseh. At the end of the parasha, which talks about travels, which would seem to be the opposite of strength and power. It would seem to indicate that the message of Chazak, Chazak, Venis, Chazek has a direct relationship with the parasha of Maaseh more than with Matas. So the Rebbe says that in general, strength is associated with the number three. As we say, that three times is a chazaka. Why is, especially, the Rebbe says, when you say chazak, chazak, when it's chazak, three times strength and three times is a chazaka, so it's a threefold strength, it's even more powerful. So why is the number three associated with strength and with power? He says, the number one represents a state, a situation where it's all good, a state in which there exists only goodness and holiness. One, that's all that exists. Two represents conflict. We say that the second day of creation is the day when it was created, machlokes, created the conflict. Two represents that there's two forces here. There's goodness and there's holiness, but there's also the existence of an opposing force. The number three, it is the resolution of that conflict, meaning the power of good and holiness to overcome whatever opposition exists. So that's why the number three expresses the idea of strength, the power of permanence. So the Rebbe says that when you talk about the strength of the number three, there's actually two ways that this strength, that you can express the strength of the number three. One is from above, that this greater power comes down from above that totally overwhelms the opposition. Totally overwhelms, right? We have one and two, so now we have the... We have good and holiness is one. We have two, which is the forces that oppose good and holiness. Along comes number three and totally overwhelms and overpowers the opposition. So that's one way of presenting the concept of three, because the tremendously powerful infinite revelation totally overwhelms the opposition. The second way of the number three is that actually, instead of just overwhelming the opposition, it's the work of elevating the from the bottom up, obviously in a way of, requires tremendous strength and power to do so, to negate the opposition, and to the point of actually to transform the opposition, not to just simply blow it away with infinite light, but to actually work from underneath, to first to negate the opposition and then ultimately to transform the opposition, to transform it into holiness. So the Rebbe says these two approaches in possible manifestations of the power of holiness, one is an infinite revelation from above that overwhelms any opposition to holiness, any concealment or opposition to holiness. The other is working from below to refine, to elevate, to ultimately transform the opposition itself into holiness, is alluded to in the Chazak as it relates to Parshas Matzah, and the idea of Chazak as it relates to Parshas Matos. Matos, which itself means powerful rulership, governance. So that's the idea of the power that comes from above and totally overwhelms the opposition. Masai travels, the idea of going from place to place, starting, right? It's the idea of working your way upwards, just starting from here and trying to get to there, and you gradually, as is the process of gradually working your way from where you are to your ultimate goal. That's the idea of working and elevating from below and working to transform the opposition into holiness. Which it means, despite the fact that you're working with, you're experiencing, you're in a very much a finite state, which is you're experiencing different changes and moving from place to place, but working within that finite reality, you're actually working ultimately towards the ultimate goal of, as described in the pasuk, of going out of Mitzrayim and getting to Eretz Yisrael. That's what you're trying to do. So whatever says, so it comes out that now, so why is it that every single year we say Chazak after Masai? We always say Chazak, when it's Chazak after Masai. And in many years it's only after Masai alone, which would see some years, in most years Matas and Masai are together, but there's a number of years where they're separate. So it would seem that the connection of Chazak, when it's Chazak, has more to do with Masai than with Matos. Matos is this greater infinite power that just totally overwhelms the opposition. That was tough. Because the power to transform the opposition, that is a much greater strength. That's a much greater power. Because it expresses the power of light and holiness to transform, to not only blow things out of the water, but to transform from within, work within the finite reality, transform from within. That is a much greater expression of the strength and power of light and holiness. So the Rebbe says, what is the ultimate expression? The ultimate expression of the power of Torah and the power of Kedusha and the power of godly light. What is the ultimate expression? The ultimate expression is when you have both together. When you have the infinite revelation from above, and you also have the internal processing and transformation from below, from within. That is the ultimate expression when you have Matas and Masai together, the Chazak of Matas and the Chazak of Masai, and the coming and the joining of the two together. But then the Rebbe goes on to say, this combination of Matas and Masai, at what point do we connect the two parshas? We know we call up seven people to the Torah, besides for the Machter. In which Aliyah do we connect the two parshas? It's always in the fourth Aliyah. We connect the two parshas. It says, what's the significance of the number four? The significance of the number four is that three, we said, represents the strength and power of holiness even in the face of opposition. But that means there's still the existence of opposition, because it comes. When do you have three? First you have one. Then you have two, which means you have opposition. Along comes three to deal with the opposition. So that means the very existence of a number three is only after you already have in a situation where you have opposition. This is the number four. On the other hand, the number four represents, it's a level that's beyond dealing with opposition. It represents permanence, as we see, and Chazal say the difference between a table or a stool that has four legs over one that has three legs. That it's much more solid. It's much more permanent. So four represents strength and permanence beyond the struggle with opposition. It was actually, it comes out that at the Shabbos that we say Chazak Chazak Minis Chazek, after completing the Book of Bamidbar, is the Book of Bamidbar is the fourth book of the Torah. The Shabbos that we say Chazak Chazak Minis Chazek, I'm completing the fourth book of the Torah, is also the Shabbos that we start reading the fifth book of the Torah by Mincha. The Rebbe says, the connection for as it follows three is following three, which three is dealing with opposition still. It's overcoming the opposition, but still being four as it's related to five. Five is actually a level that's way beyond. In fact, we know that it's brought in Kabbalah and Chassidus that the level of five represents infinite revelation, Hachamishus Lepara, Mineas Periyu Kol Nahirin, the revelation of all lights without any limitations, absolute infinity. Okay? Like I said, the numbers, it's just... And the Rebbe says, you can actually see the connection. Yeah. So the Rebbe says, and now we can explain the connection between Chazak, Chazak, and this Chazak on the fourth book of the Torah, which we complete in Parshas Matas Masai, to the significance of the time of the 3 weeks. And in this year, the 9 days. The Rebbe says, in order to understand this, we have to first preface the fact that what is the ultimate intent and purpose of exile and destruction? Which is what the content, the significance of the 3 weeks and the 9 days. What's the whole purpose of exile and destruction? We know that the whole purpose of exile and destruction is only in order to build the future based on English and bring the future redemption. In fact, the Gemara says that the whole destruction was almanas, is conditional on building the next one. It's called, in the laws of Shabbos, it's normally in the laws of Shabbos, when you destroy, it's not considered a malacha. In most cases, there's a rabbinic prohibition against destructive acts. But min ha-Torah, a destructive act is not considered, in most cases, is not considered a malacha. When is it considered a malacha? If you knock a house down in order to build. If you're doing demolition to prepare for construction, demolition to prepare for construction is a positive act. It's not a negative act. It's a positive act. It's not a destructive act. It's a constructive act. So the same thing it says about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that it's not a destructive act. It's a constructive act that was only done in order to pave the way to build the future Beis HaMikdash and to bring about the future redemption. Well, the Rebbe makes the association because the Gemara uses the same language when describing the Churban. The Gemara says Al-Menas. It's the same language when we say for the express purpose of. And in general, in halacha, the term almanas has many legal ramifications, and always means that it's actually an express linkage, an exclusive express linkage. It's not something that will, it's a direct. You're saying this is because of that. This is on condition of that. It's not. It's actually conditional.
So they link the destruction to the building?
Right. So the Gemara says that the reason why that the Avish came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, Almanas, to rebuild it. So the Rebbe says, so what's the explanation? Because obviously the point is to create a much greater Beis HaMikdash, which also, by the way, the third is associated with the idea of Chazaka, a third Beis HaMikdash, because it's much more powerful and much more permanent. So the Rebbe says, by the way, this idea of a permanent Beis HaMikdash is actually brought out much earlier on in history. Chazal tells us that really, as soon as the Jewish people stepped out of the sea, it says they should have, if they would have merited, they were supposed to, as soon as they stepped out of the sea, they should have entered into Eretz Yisrael and built the Beis HaMikdash immediately. And it's brought, we know, it's brought in Svarim, that if they, the famous Megala Amukas, that says that if they would have, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have brought the Yidden into Eretz Yisrael right directly after Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we wouldn't have had this whole process of a temporary Beis HaMikdash, two temporary Beis HaMikdash leading to a permanent Beis HaMikdash, but that entrance into Eretz Yisrael and that building the Beis HaMikdash would have been the ultimate redemption. That would have been the permanent. So the Rebbe says, comes out that it was already supposed to have been a long time ago. If they would have merited it already at the time that they came out of Mitzrayim, the Eretz is ready. In terms of, as it is from above, we're ready for the... So the Rebbe says, so that reality doesn't change. That reality is permanent. If that's where they were holding from above, we're holding by the permanent redemption and the permanent basis, that means from above it's already present. The only reason why, if that's not the reality that we have, that's only because of external factors. Because of external factors is in terms of the tachten, in terms of the lower reality. In terms of the lower reality, we weren't ready to embrace that higher reality. That higher reality was present already then, and it's permanent. It's always all matters of Torah are eternal. All matters of Torah are permanent. That's what Torah says. Where in terms of what was coming from above, what's coming from above is a permanent redemption, a permanent base, something's already since Yetzias Mitzrayim, since Kriyas Yams. So what was missing? What was missing is, so that means we already have, when it comes to a base, something's, when it comes to redemption, we already have the power and the force of the of redemption and a base, something's from above. What's lacking? What's lacking is you need to have the power and the permanence of a base something from below. That's what's lacking. There was this, but on the other hand, if you only have the power and permanence of a base something just through the efforts of the people down below, that's also not enough. Because in fact, this is illustrated by the existence of the two Batei Mikdash that we already have. The first Beis HaMikdash was primarily a revelation from above. But because we weren't suitable vessel for that revelation, it ended up being destroyed. The second Beis HaMikdash came more through the efforts of the people from below. And that's why it was missing. So first of all, in terms of the actual holiness and revelation that was in the second Beis HaMikdash, it was weaker. Because it was more finite, and ultimately it was destroyed, and its destruction has lasted much longer, because it only came from below. You didn't have, lacked the revelation from above, that's why five things were missing, and you didn't have all the miracles. And so the ultimate is, when you have both, the power of the Beis HaMikdash and redemption from above, and combined with power of making the world and elevating the world to a state of being a place for the a hospitable place for Beis HaMikdash and for redemption from below, when you have the co-joining of the two together, that you have the permanence of a third Beis HaMikdash. So the Rebbe says that we can connect this power and permanence of a third Beis HaMikdash and the third redemption, which comes from the unification of the revelation from above and the revelation from below, was even brought out even more, that sometimes we find that the ultimate redemption is referred to as the fourth redemption. Because sometimes we count four exiles. And in fact, in some places it's referred to as the fifth redemption, because we count four more exiles besides for Egypt. We count four more exiles. So it's the fifth redemption. So we see the number, as we explained before, that the number four represents even greater permanence. The number five represents infinite permanence. It's all great and wonderful. And this is emphasized even more in Shabbos Chazak on the fourth book, which we say in the 3 weeks or the 9 days by proclaiming Chazak, Chazak, v'nis Chazek, the idea of strength and a threefold strength and Shabbos of Parshas of Matas Masai, we're alluding to the power of the third Beis Hamikdash and the third redemption that comes after and through connecting the positive qualities of both the first Beis Hamikdash and the second Beis Hamikdash, the Hamshacha from above, the Halah from below, the Matas and the Masai, it's all together, and we connect this in Revi, and we say it at the end of the in the Aliyah Revi, and we say it at the end of the book, the Sefer Revi, the fourth book, and the Shabbos when we're going to start the fifth book. And the Rebbe says that all of these numbers that are connected to the future Beis Hamikdash and the future redemption are also alluded to in the time that we read the Parsha Matas Masa, and we say Chazak, Chazak, and Nischazak on the fourth book. What's the time? We say it in the 3 weeks. Oh, that's the number three, the mile of the third Beis Hamikdash and the third redemption. We say it in the fourth month in most years. We say it in the fourth month, the month of Tammuz, which is the idea of the power of four. And in some years, like in this year, it comes out in the fifth month, in the month of Av. So there, it's even greater, the expression of the fifth redemption and the level of Chamishi. It's all wonderful. And this is also the strength that empowers us in all matters of Torah and Mitzvahs, and especially as it comes to our actions, our deeds, and our service throughout the entire period of Golos. Following the Chorban, which we're mourning in this period of 3 weeks, because through this, it empowers us and brings us to the strength and the power of the future redemption, the ultimate, the eternal redemption, and the eternal Beis Hamikdash. Okay, then the Rebbe goes on to talk about the another point. The Rebbe talks about another point that's connected to this Shabbos is that it's the day following Rosh Chodesh Av, which is the yahrzeit of Aaron HaKohen, who's the only person whose yahrzeit is mentioned in the Torah. So again, I'm not going to have time to go into the whole thing, but basically the Rebbe says that one of the things that's unique about Aaron HaKohen is interesting, that some of his main qualities we find out about are brought out dafka at the time of his passing. How do we know that he was someone who loved peace and pursued peace? We learn it out from the fact that after he passed away, it says that all the Jewish people mourned him. So it's dafka from his passing, we learn out how he spent his life, that his relationship with the people, with the public, was different than that of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was Ayyub Shalom, Raydur Shalom, he was very involved in promoting peace. The other thing we find out about upon his passing is that it says that the Canaanites heard that he passed. So what does it mean? And they thought now they could attack the Jewish people. What did they hear about? Because Rashi explains that they saw that the clouds of glory departed because he passed. That's why they thought now the Jewish people are vulnerable. So we learn from that that the clouds of glory were in the merit of Aaron HaKohen. So the Rebbe says that we know that the man is in the merit of Moshe. The be'er, the man, the food that they ate was in the merit of Moshe. The be'er was, the water that they drank was in the merit of Miriam. And the clouds of glory were in the merit of Aaron. The Rebbe says the difference between these three things is that the man is individualized for each person, and in fact it's something each person takes individually. It's limited to their personal intake. So the man came down in a finite measure. In fact, the Torah says a specific measure that each person came down in a finite measure, and it was something that was taken internally by each person. So it emphasizes the finite nature of it and the fact of each person as a separate individual. Water, even though it's not as limited, doesn't say that there was any limitation of the water, that there was any specific measure of water that each person got. But still, water still ultimately comes to each one separately, and everybody drinks their own amount, whatever that amount is. There was no limit on the amount, but still, ultimately, first of all, we find that each one of the tribes drew their own separate water source from the general well, So we see the separation between each of the tribes, and ultimately it's still, it is the separation of each individual and their each individual consumption. Whereas when it comes to the cloud of glory, the clouds of glory encompass everyone equally. It encompasses everyone together. It does not have the limitations and the distinctions between one person and another. And that's also the significance of Aaron's being someone who loves peace and pursues peace and loves the God's creatures and brings them close to the Torah. How did he do that? By revealing the point of unity that exists between all Jews equally. By transcending the differences and by bringing out that transcendent aspect of each Jew that is above individual differences and distinctions. That's how he was able to achieve peace. So the Rebbe explains how this is alluded to in the name of Aaron. And also the Rebbe explains how Aaron doesn't just represent the idea of a revelation from above that encompasses all differences, but actually in Aaron's Avodah is both Hamshacha and Halah. Is the bringing down of a great unifying light that overcomes all separations and distinctions, but there's also the work from below of elevating the people so that they're able to connect to that level that transcends all distinctions. It explains that this is alluded to in Berachos Kohanim, which it's explained in Chassidus, that Berachos Kohanim has the power of both a bracha and also the power of tefillah. The bracha is bringing down a divine hashpah from above, and tefillah is elevating the person from below in order to be able to receive the hashpah, and so on. And the Rebbe connects it to the day echad lachedesh, chedesh hachamishi. That echad is that by Aaron was the inyan of one all-inclusive unity, at the same time in the way of Chedesh HaChamishi, which is the level of five, which transcends all the divisions and limitations of Seida Ishtalshus. That's why the Torah specifically writes about his passing and the date of his passing, because his life, the passing, brought in Tanya that the time of the day of a person's passing has elevated the work of his entire lifetime, because this brings out the work of his entire lifetime, which is the unification of all Jewish people and the unification of bringing godly light from below, from above, and elevating the lower reality so that it should be able to embrace the higher revelation. Now, what are the lessons from everything that we discussed above? What are the lessons of Ma'aseh V'Po'el? So the Rebbe says, standing on Shabbos Chazak of the fourth book of the Torah, in which we begin the fifth book of the Torah, especially in a year when it comes out in the fifth month, which emphasizes the strength and the power and the permanence of the future Beis HaMikdash in the future redemption, which is not only a third redemption, but it's also a fourth redemption and even a fifth redemption, because, and the reason why it's so powerful and so permanent is because it's higher than all the distinctions that we make between the first and the second Beis HaMikdash and the first and second redemption. So there has to be a special emphasis as relates to the point of unity that exists amongst all Jews, the point of unity that transcends all differences. So what does this mean in practical terms? How does he bring it to action? Ma'aseh V'Po'el, through following the ways of Aaron, as to following the instructions of the Mishnah, as it says, you should be from the students of Aaron, those who love peace and pursue peace, love the creatures and bring them close to the Torah. And the way we accomplish this is by revealing the point of unity that transcends all differences between one Jew and another. It says, more specifically, by analyzing the actual wording of the Mishnah says, first of all, the Mishnah says, Heve mitamidu shalach. It says you should be, meaning it's a command, it's not a suggestion, it's not a good idea, it's telling you that you have to be, and it's also empowering you. If the Mishnah is telling you that it's instructing you and commanding you to be, it means it's also telling you that you have the power and the ability to be. And also it says in the plural, you should be from his students. It doesn't say you should be a student, you should be from his students. Why does it emphasize the plural? Because the work to be amongst the students of Aaron has to be, it's not something you do on your own. The whole point is, you need to get others involved. So the Rebbe says, we also, emphasize the connection between Avos Yisrael and the future redemption. The Rebbe says, here's what the Rebbe says. The Rebbe says, not only to negate the exile, because the way to negate the exile is by negating the cause of the exile, which the cause of the exile came from the opposite of Avos Yisrael. This is no, because since we're standing after all our work and efforts throughout the period of Golos, and after completing all 42 travels in the desert of the nations, and we're standing already on the River Jordan, which is the level of Mashiach, Yarden Yerecha, the Jordan of Jericho, which is the level of Mashiach, Yericha is Merech V'Dayin. So we're standing on the threshold of Geulah, so certainly we've already corrected the cause of Golos. That's not the problem. Therefore, the emphasis on Avos Yisrael is as a foretaste, and even a beginning of the true and complete redemption, which is connected with the point of unity that transcends all differentiation, all differences, which is emphasized and brought out through the unity of the Jewish people, Mitzad Yechida, which is the fifth level of the Jew, of the soul that's in all Jews equally, which is also the spark of the soul of Mashiach, who's the Yechida HaKlolos. And based on this, we could also add, in the meaning of the Mishnah, now that we're saying that your love of your fellow Jew, your pursuit of peace and your love of your fellow Jew should be already as an expression of the beginning of redemption. It's not to correct the exile, but as the beginning of redemption by revealing the Yechida. So the Rebbe says, so now we can say that this that it says, Oivus Abrius and Mekarvan La Torah, what does it mean, bring them close to the Torah? What it means is to bring them close to the study of Torah, of the future redemption, the Torah of Torah Chadashim Eititetz. And then the Rebbe goes on and connects it with a Mishnah from that week. Shimon says you should be, Shimon ben Asano says you should be careful with Krishna and Davening, and the Rebbe goes on to connect it with that. So again, so the point is, what we started off at the beginning of the whole talk, the point that the Rebbe is, all these points that the Rebbe is making is that when you talk about making a transition from one way of experiencing, of perceiving and experiencing reality, to another way of experiencing and perceiving reality, right? So the one thing, what's the one thing that holds you back?
Vietnam.
The one thing that holds you back is the feeling that you're jumping without a parachute. You're entering into the unknown. You feel, you don't feel you have the you don't feel you have the ability, you don't feel you have the knowledge, you don't feel you have the spiritual strength, fortitude, the insight. You feel like, you're talking about, the Rebbe is saying, to take a leap from the Galus reality, and you need to start preparing yourself and adjusting yourself and putting yourself into a Gula state and changing your whole way of perceiving the world, your way of perceiving reality, and this is what you need to be doing. So the one thing that holds people back is the feeling of, like I said, taking a leap without a parachute. You feel like, you feel weak and ineffectual and incapable, and that's what holds people back. That is the biggest feeling that people have. You walk, you go up to people now, 20 years, 21 years after these talks, talk to people who are Kochim Mashiach, and And then Mashiach, Mashiach, and everything's Mashiach, and they talk about Mashiach, and Mashiach, and Mashiach, and you'd like to say, okay, so, wow, so what, so how come, so how about, well, you know, what we need to do is really get ourselves into, just whatever says, we need to get ourselves into a state, into start living that reality, and start living that, and all of a sudden, who am I, what am I, where... And it's even worse by the people who don't talk Mashiach, Mashiach all the time. They say, they feel even weaker and even more ineffectual. They feel like, who am I? What are we? What can we do? If the Rebbe didn't do it, what can we do? We could. See, the whole blockage that exists is this whole perception, this whole feeling of weakness. That's what it is. It all comes down to, it's a feeling of weakness. It all sounds very good. It's very interesting to read and to learn, and it's all very interesting and fascinating. If you like the numerology stuff, that's interesting. If you like the deepest the Hasidic concepts, that's all very interesting and fascinating. It's all describing, wow, a new reality, a new this, a new that. It's all very great. But when it comes to bringing it down to me and what I need to do, it's like, who am I? What am I? Where? What? When? Who? And you still basically end up going back to the same old thing, which is you're basically waiting for something to happen. That's really what you're doing. You're just sitting around. Yeah, obviously you learn Torah and you do mitzvahs and you do good stuff and you do the stuff that you feel confident. You feel the stuff that you feel is within your area of strength, within your area of expertise. You may even try to expand, the part of a feeling of strength is the feeling that if I do a little more exercise, I'll get a little stronger. That's part of having the strength and the confidence that I can do. Is you also know you could expand and grow, and but you're working from your strengths. You're not working from the idea, the thing, the area where we need to make the biggest mental shift in terms of this whole thing is the idea of you have the power. You have the power, you have the strength. You've been given the power, the strength, and you have the power to, when necessary, run over the opposition, but that's not the ultimate point. The point is to actually work with and transform the opposition. You have the power to, when necessary, you have the power to blow the opposition away. When necessary, you also have the power to work and transform the opposition, and you have to do both. And it's also your own internal. It's in the world around you, and it's your own internal oppositions. You have to know that you have the power, you have the strength, you have the abilities. You are being given the power and the strength. So again, it's the numbers is just the Rebbe's hanging his hat on these numbers, but it's not, that's how, however spiritually the Rebbe's mamshich brings an inyan down, so everything comes through words and letters and numbers, and so it's not so much nigeya how the Rebbe's, the hamshach of how the Rebbe is bringing it down into the world. The point that the Rebbe is telling you is, you have the power, and you have the power to be working and traveling and living in your, already starting to live with your final destination of the ultimate redemption, and you have the power to reveal that in the world in a way that A, elevates and transforms the opposition, first negating and then transforming the opposition, and B, in a way that the world could fully receive and embrace the infinite revelation. And this is all, this strength, this power is being handed over to you. That's, you have to bring it out within yourself. Every strength and power that a person has, a lot of people are born with a lot of potential strengths and powers. If you don't bring them out, you don't bring them out. You have to obviously develop the strengths and powers that you're given. That's what it means to work. Guy stays in bed for a year, his muscles are going to atrophy, right? That he doesn't lack strength in his muscles, you know, then start using them. You know what I mean? The fact that it is, so now all of a sudden, now he's taka weak, and Itaka has to start all over from him. But, so the point that the Rebbe's making here is, and not just, you know, it's not just that Chav Chasnis and the Rebbe said, okay, I'm going into retirement and I'm handing you the job. This is the whole point is that you're being infused with this tremendous power to actually affect the transition in a way. If it all comes from me, that's not the point. Then it's just a revelation from above and blowing away the opposition. It has to come from within. It has to be the combination of both. I can bring the infinite revelation to the table. You guys need to bring the transformation from below to the table. The transformation from below and transitioning yourself and the world into receiving that revelation of the ultimate, and the third and permanent, based on English, the third and permanent and true and ultimate redemption. Take it from Yad Mamish, and we should be able to celebrate Tisha B'Av, go straight from the celebration of Tisha B'Av that falls out on Shabbos to skip the, you know, as the Gemara says, that once it's pushed away, it's be pushed away permanently. Amen.